Welcome to the premiere episode of Spoleto Backstage, a podcast where we take you through the stage doors to places you can't get a ticket to. You'll get to meet the people that make things happen and have real conversation with the performers when they're not on stage. I'll be your host, Jeanette Gwynn. We'll meet Jeff Nuttall, director and host of the party that is chamber music at Dock Street, and the musical mayor, John Tecklenburg. First, come with me to the Spoleto Festival Command Center. This is the 42nd year of Spoleto Festival USA, and history is rife with emerging stars that performed at Spoleto and then went on to great professional success. Nigel Redden is the general director, or the big kahuna, of the entire festival. He has a corner office at 14 George in the Middleton Pinckney House, built in 1798 by Major General Thomas Pinckney and rehabbed in 2002. There's a puppet hanging from the mantel in his office. You've done a lot of cool artists in the past who were great surprises. So how many are going to be the great surprises from this year that we look back in 10 years and say, wow, can you believe we saw them 10 years ago at Spoleto?
I wish I were pressured in that way, and I can't be. I know that Elliot Madore, who is our father son in Tree of Codes, has an extraordinary voice. He is among many of the singers who have extraordinary voices this year, and certainly Pier de Tolomei is filled with a cast that makes this kind of quintessentially Italian opera come alive in a way that at least is remarkable to me. The actress in Borders, whose name I can never pronounce correctly, is someone who makes a story that is very personal and very, very tragic come alive both in sorrow and in humor.
Compared to presenting a touring artist like Ricky Skaggs, what does it mean when you produce an opera? Can you just like walk us through that process for maybe one of the operas this year?
Well, what it means with an opera, and both with Pier de Tolomei and Tree of Codes, it means deciding to do a production of that particular piece. And both of them are American premieres. One, of course, is from the 19th century, and the other one is from the 21st century. In, let's take the Tree of Codes, what that means is we decide to do it. We then decide who should direct it. In this case, it's Ong Keng-sen, who has worked with us a number of times in the past. And the composer and librettist for Tree of Codes is Lisa Lim. She's Australian of Chinese descent who now works in Germany. The piece itself is based on a story by Bruno Schultz that was then modified by Jonathan Safran Foer. So we then had to think about who should be the designer. Ong Keng-sen suggested that we work with someone who had been a lighting designer for him in past years, who actually has created what we now call the monolith, which is this extraordinarily large structure in the Dock Street Theatre that lights from within, and that Austin Switzer, who's the videographer, will light from outside with video transformation. So we saw the set design a number of months ago. We then had to build it. We had to find the cast members, Madore and Marisol Montalvo, and a resident conductor, John Kennedy, is actually conducting the piece. So what it means is that we're building it piece by piece from the ground up.
So what do we get to see this year?
The thing that always excites me most about the festival is the idea of a festival. That is, that it's a kind of a surfeit of opportunities. We begin the day at 11 o'clock with a wonderful and very unusual chamber music concert in the Dock Street Theatre. Jeff Nuttall has organized 11 different programs, and they vary from 18th and 19th century repertory, but he weaves in contemporary work, 20th century work, and I think that if the juxtaposition of these things enriches the program immensely. So you've gone to a chamber music performance at 11, then perhaps you might go to Il Matrimonio Segreto, which is a wonderfully amusing opera by Cimarosa that is going to be performed by the Cola Marionettes, which is a group that's come here many, many times over the years. The singers will be in the pit, and they are members of Westminster Choir, and of course we'll have our own orchestra there as well. And then perhaps you might go to the Miami City Ballet in the evening. In fact, this year we're opening the festival with the Miami City Ballet and some dancers from New York City Ballet doing a tribute to Jerome Robbins, who had been very much part of the festival in Italy and part of our legacy from that festival. He created a ballet company for Spoleto in 1958. But in 1973, he did something called the Celebration of the Art of the Pas de Deux, and we are recreating that looking at his choreography and the way in which couples partner in his choreography. But then you might want to see a play, and The Flying Lovers of Vitebsk is a delightful look at love and marriage. In this case, it's Marc Chagall and Bella Chagall, who both came from Vitebsk in what is now, I think, the Ukraine. But Chagall became one of the major painters of the 20th century. But then there's also some other things in the festival that are just going to be tremendous fun. Backbone, which is this kind of physical theater from Australia, with people doing things that you don't want to try and do at home. And then The Strange Undoing of Prudencia Hart is a kind of Scottish tall tale told in a bar about a librarian who meets the devil. It's a wonderfully immersive piece in which the audience has to help create the mood of the bar in Scotland, in which she meets this strange man and then lives for 500 years. And then we end the festival in a different way than we have in the past. I mean, Lone Bellow will be at the Joe, at the Joe Riley Ballpark, but it, I think, will be a wonderful way to end the festival with fireworks coming up over the Ashley, as they always have.
Does art matter? Does it affect people? Does it change communities?
Art does matter, and I don't think it necessarily makes people better people. I wish it did, but it doesn't necessarily do that. But it does make people, I think about themselves and think about the place in which they live more deeply. I hope that what the festival does in doing a full spectrum of work, I mean, I think the earliest work that we're doing in this year's program will probably date from the late 17th century, and the most recent one will have been created in the last few weeks. To see history in that way is extremely valuable, and specifically in Charleston, I think it's immensely valuable. This is a city that was particularly wedded to culture. The first opera, of course, was performed here and so on. One doesn't have to do that litany. But it's also a city that has contributed to what contemporary America is. The fact that so many Africans arrived here enslaved, I mean, is not necessarily something one should be proud of. But it, clearly what those Africans brought was a culture that has changed America radically, but it's also changed American music very, very strongly. And somehow to celebrate the European culture, the African culture, and the culture of the future, which I think is going to involve influences from other parts of the world, is something that I think is part of the DNA of what Charleston has been, and I hope what Charleston will continue to be.
This is hard, challenging work you do. Why have you been doing it for so long? Why do you keep
doing it? I love doing what I do. I wanted to do this from, well, I suppose it was the second, or maybe it was the third festival where I was an apprentice or an intern in Italy. I decided that this would be something that I really wanted to do, and with luck, I would be able to do it. And somehow I've managed to continue to do this. And the wonderful thing is that we don't just do rote things. It's not, okay, we've got a template, and we're going to fit something in here. It's really trying to make an entire program fit together in ways that perhaps are not obvious to an audience member, but we feel that there are threads that join pieces together. And also one of the realities is, of course, that most people who come to the festival see only a few of the performances that we offer. They won't be able to see all 150 of them, but they will have created a festival for themselves that will have resonance in their own mind. And they have interpretations that are quite different from mine. And I think that's great. I think that's absolutely what the arts allow, that they can stimulate your imagination so that you have your own reaction and not necessarily the reaction that the composer or the playwright or the author had in mind, but nonetheless one that is absolutely and primarily your own.
Thanks, Nigel. And to everyone listening, I hope you're as excited as I am about creating a festival for yourself. Charleston, South Carolina is filling fast with dancers, musicians, actors, and artists for Spoleto Festival and its little sister, Piccolo. 17 of my favorite days every year, and you've got a pass to see it from the inside. Victoria Hansen will introduce us to Mayor Tecklenburg. He's the first new mayor Charleston has had in 40 years. He's a hometown son, committed to a vibrant arts community, with good reason.
He may be the only Charleston mayor who can play the Charleston. And if you haven't seen John Tecklenburg glide across the keys, he embraces them with his entire body. His head swings, his feet slide. He is the city's piano-playing mayor. We meet downtown, where he has welcomed a Dutch delegation to discuss flooding in the city. Tucked between his pile of papers, he slips out a Spoleto guide. He gushes as he flips through the pages. The corners of his lips curl up, and a childlike excitement shines through his eyes.
Favorite Spoleto memories was the very first Spoleto Festival.
The year was 1977. Tecklenburg had just graduated from college.
And my dad, his business was a sponsor for the first Spoleto. And so they gave him two tickets to every event in the whole festival. And so there on the sideboard in our dining room, Dad had all the tickets laid out. And I just felt like I was a kid in a candy store.
He wasn't working yet. In fact, he had a couple of weeks off.
So it was every day picking out what event I wanted to go to. It was just, it was fabulous.
Tecklenburg was born and raised in Charleston and grew up in a piano-playing family. He was studying chemistry at Georgetown University when he abruptly changed his tune, attending the Berklee College of Music in Boston instead. There, he looked up a song called I'm Through With Love.
I have given you my true love, but you love a new love. What am I?
The voice, by the way, is Tecklenburg's as he plays. The song was recorded by Nat King Cole, Ella Fitzgerald, and Bing Crosby. But it was written by the mayor's great uncle, Fud Livingston.
And there's only this to say.
Fud, it turns out, played with some of the most renowned musicians of the jazz age, like Glenn Miller and Benny Goodman. Tecklenburg says Fud was in love, but the woman he wanted left him for Jack Dempsey.
For I must have you or no one.
The Song of Heartbreak deepened Tecklenburg's love of music, in particular jazz.
Yes, I'm through with love.
I'm a jazz fan, and there are a number of great jazz pianists that are going to be here this year.
And there is one group he is especially looking forward to.
Oh, and let me shout out to Ranky Tanky.
The Charleston-based ensemble features jazz-influenced arrangements of traditional Gullah music.
And watch out, they are hot.
As Spoleto begins its 42nd season, and Tecklenburg reflects on its first.
Great memories.
He simply cannot imagine the festival anywhere but here. Charleston may be known as the holy city, but it is the chosen city when it comes to Spoleto.
I don't think it could work anywhere else in America.
Thanks, Victoria. Always fun talking to Mayor Tecklenburg, or as I know him, Uncle Fud's nephew. We're so glad you're along for the first visit with Spoleto Backstage. In a minute, we have some opening weekend highlights, but first, come along to the Dock Street Theater where Bradley Fuller meets Jeff Nuttall, the ringmaster of Spoleto Chamber Music.
Jeff, it's great to have you once again.
Pleasure to be here.
Hard to believe that Spoleto is already upon us once more. This is your 9th season directing the festival's chamber music series?
Damn. 9th season? Is that right? Man, it seems like just yesterday that I was on stage with Charles, and we had that sort of 2-year joint deal. That's crazy. Man, what are we going to do for 10 years? We're going to have a blowout. Every year I think, well, we can't do anything that crazy again. And then stuff happens, and we do all sorts of crazy stuff. And this year is no exception. We got another composer in residence who's a madman, and a jack quartet, and two great singers, and maybe that's why it seems like it's so long, because I've already forgotten all those other years, because you're so focused on the year in question and what's happening now and finding the music and getting people on board and making sure nobody works too hard or doesn't play enough. So it's always an amazingly energizing challenge.
So you're not only the host of the 33 performance series announcing and introducing pieces, but you're also a performer and it's with the St. Lawrence String Quartet. But on the host side of things, have you always been able to talk about these classical works in an easygoing manner, in a relatable manner? Is that a talent you've had to cultivate?
Well, you know, I think it's like anything. You get better as you get older, and you get better as you do it more. Well, I guess it's not like basketball. I was better at basketball when I was 20. But from a musician's point of view, you get better, and experience goes a long way. So teaching is a big part of it as well. Being a teacher now for so many years, you have to force yourself to figure out how can you express to someone what makes this so incredible or what makes it so great. And so that's been really helpful. Hanging out with Charles for years was really helpful too, and watching him, the great Charles Wadsworth, the master of comic timing, and seeing how the way he was could infect an audience and make them listen better. So that was a great lesson. Rob Capello, our great colleague and friend, is an amazing mentor and inspiration about talking to people about music and what it can do to open a few doors or a few ears to the possibilities for listening. So there's been a lot of influences, but I think it's hard to overestimate actually doing it. And you talk to anybody, whether it's playing, I still get nervous, but I used to get really nervous, both speaking and playing in public. And the only way really to get past that is to force yourself to do it a lot. So, I mean, it's something I'm passionate about, but I'm definitely better at it, I hope, than I was 15, 20 years ago.
For this year's series, are there any old favorites, either with the music, the programs lined up, any favorite pieces kind of in the chamber repertoire that are being performed again, that you can fall back on, some that you know like the back of your hand and that are really easy to kind of bring forward?
Yeah, you know, for me, it's always a fun mix. The eclecticism is really important, and the balance between old and new is really important. The balance between hackneyed and unknown is really important, and all of these things happen. So, for example, this year, the Warhorse is like Brahms G minor piano quartet, you know, incredible Gypsy last movement, the Schubert E-flat piano trio, one of the greatest pieces ever created, Schoenberg's Verklärte Nacht, a string sextet, which is not modern, it's old, but it's a standard rep, an incredible journey, and we've done it numerous times on stage at Dock Street Theater. I thought that would be something we should do this year. So you have the standards like that, and then you have a new octet by Doug Balliot, recently created. You have, composer in residence, you have the Jack Quartet, who are a new music specialist playing a new quartet by Philip Glass. So there's a mix of old and new. There's an unknown. I didn't know this guy. This is a great example of how the team sort of inspires each other. Doug Balliot also plays the bass, and he said, "Hey, you got to hear this Valentini sort of late Renaissance, early Baroque composer who I'd never heard of. Super crazy cool, little symphonia with two keys going on at the same time." And so discovering old stuff that's new as well.
Are there any new works this year that you're really excited about? Anything that's, you mentioned the composer in residence, Doug Balliot, and he's a festival newcomer?
Yeah, Doug is new, and we worked with Doug at Stanford. He wrote a piece for us for soprano and string quartet that we did, and he was such a quirky madman, and he also happens to be an incredible bass player, and he teaches the Baroque bass at Juilliard School. So it was a way to have him come down. He's excited to write a new octet for two string quartets, the Jack Quartet and the St. Lawrence Quartet. So that's the big new commission. But he's also agreed to write a little short fanfare for a weird combination of instruments, trombone, bass clarinet, and string bass. He's going to write an arrangement or make an arrangement of one of my favorite Queen songs, Who Wants to Live Forever, that the great American tenor Paul Groves. Paul will do his best Freddie Mercury imitation to end the festival with a new arrangement by Doug Balliot. So there's the serious, there's the crazy, and there's new pieces by like Philip Glass Quartet and the Jack Quartet playing a piece by Mark Applebaum, who was our composer in residence a couple of years ago, and Mark will be here. So there's just, I really think it's important to connect to living people who are making music, and that's going to be a big part of it.
How long does it take the musicians of the Chamber Music Series to kind of mesh as, not as a whole, because they might not perform together all the time for every performance, but do you find it takes a while sometimes for a certain clicking to happen, or does
it
take off right away?
I mean, I really try to bring people who, A, I love and know are great, and if they're new, I make sure that they're presented in a way which allows them to succeed in the best possible and easiest possible way. So, you know, the Jack's coming, and we're going to play some stuff together, but I know it's stuff that will be in their sweet spot and their zone. And a lot of the players that are coming back, and I know them incredibly well, and we worked. I know what it's like to work with them. So it's really repertoire-specific, too. I mean, this new ballet at Octet is going to take a lot of time because it's new work. Nobody knows it. He'll be there. But something like Brahms G minor piano quartet with Enon Barnaton and Livia, and I mean, these guys know each other. They know the piece. It's super easy to put stuff like that together. So it really, it's repertoire specific, but everybody that comes is not only amazing and an incredible player, but also super easy to work with and a joy to hang out with. They wouldn't be here otherwise.
So you'd say it underscores the old saying that chamber music is the music of friends?
Oh, totally, yeah. I have no patience for anybody, no how good they are, if they're full of themselves. And, you know, chamber music has no room for that kind of ego. And so that's why that type of person doesn't come here. And it just makes it, it makes it impossible when you're dealing with people like that. And look, chamber music is a niche market. It's not like big money or anything. So the egos are, even among, like, look at our singers. Anthony Roth Costanzo, one of the great stars of the world right now, and Paul Groves, he's sung at every major opera house in the world in the last 30 years. They're both going to come and hang out because they're friends and they're cool. But you couldn't say that about a lot of singers and a lot of big stars. So we're incredibly lucky that people like Anthony and Paul are like, yeah, I'll come down for like very little money and hang out and do some singing. It's because of the city, the festival, the players, the friends, it's, you know, all that goes into making what we do possible. It's really, I mean, I'm biased because I'm the director, but I think it's a really special place. And I think it's the combination, like the audience, for instance, in the theater, Dock Street Theater, it's magical. And you're singing or playing for a packed house of people who really love music and want to be there. And so that goes a long way. I mean, it's really important. And then you throw in the fact that you're in Charleston, South Carolina, one of the most beautiful places on the planet, which now has, you know, arguably the top three or four food culture spots in the country. And to a man and woman, musicians I know love food and wine. So you can't separate those two. So they get to come hang out. They get to play in this incredible hall that's small and intimate but packed with rabid fans who love what they're doing. And you get to hang out with friends and stay in nice places. So, I mean, I think it's all these things going to, together. It's doing what they love to do in a place that sort of is perfect in so many ways.
Well, Jeff, it's been a pleasure catching up about Spoleto Festival and all the best this year in Charleston with your adventures on stage and around town at the restaurants.
We'll see you at Dock Street.
Take care. Yeah. Thanks.
Thanks, Bradley. And now for those opening weekend highlights. The opening ceremony begins at high noon at the intersection of Meeting and Broad Streets, the Four Corners of Law. If you can't be there in person, join us for a live stream from the City of Charleston's Facebook, followed by chamber music at 11 and 1 every day for the next 17 days. Miami City Ballet presents an evening of perfectly paired duets in honor of Jerome Robbins, with more Miami City across the weekend. Piccolo's Sunset Serenade tradition continues with the Charleston Symphony in a free outdoor performance at the U.S. Custom House, corner of Concord and East Bay. John Batiste performs Friday and Saturday at the College of Charleston's Cistern Yard, and Saturday from 10 to 3, it's Family Day at Marion Square. The producer for our show is A.T. Shire. The executive producer is Sherry Hutchinson. Production assistants are Jenna Feeney, Marley Bryan, Virginia Swift, William Howell, all students in the Arts Management Program at the College of Charleston. Produced in partnership with South Carolina Public Radio, the ETV Endowment, the College of Charleston, and Spoleto Festival USA. I'm your host, Jeanette Gwynn, and I'll see you next time backstage.
Are you going to be there? You coming down?
Yeah.